Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm your host, Paul David, co-founder and CEO of Literal Humans. And I'm joined today by Ross Mitchell, the co-founder of Research Goat. We're here today to talk about generative AI for in-depth qualitative research. Welcome to the pod, Ross.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And where are you calling in from today?
Los Angeles, California.
Nice. Well, thanks for taking an early one for us over in the British summertime time zone. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
So just by way of introduction, Ross is the CEO and co-founder of Research Goat, which is an AI-powered qualitative research platform that helps businesses understand their customers. So just to clarify and full disclosure, we are a customer of Research Goat. We're just diving into it to kind of research some HR tech founders and get some good qualitative research from them for our content. So just wanted to put that out there. Ross is also a creative leader in Neil, which is a London-based company that helps businesses hire creative leaders for fractional support and assemble project teams quickly. I'm also a member of Neil. And Ross has an incredible client roster that includes Netflix, Amazon, Meta, Google, Microsoft, Xerox, Samsung, Ford, Lucid, Amgen, AT&T, Mitsubishi, just to name a few, just a few small companies that maybe you've heard of. So we're really grateful to have you on the pod today, Ross.
Yeah, thanks for that great introduction.
I want to jump right in and just talk about the ways in which AI seems to be reshaping really every aspect of the tech industry. Curious to understand how you see it transforming the way businesses understand and interact with their customers. If you could share maybe a bit more about Research Goat's AI-powered platform and maybe any examples of some breakthrough insights it's led to for your clients and maybe how it's reshaped their strategies and their product.
Yeah, I mean, Research Goat at its heart, I mean, is a platform designed to automate the qualitative research process, which, you know, every company wants to, or, you know, says they want to get close to their customer, but, you know, it's very difficult to do, takes a lot of time, takes a lot of money. So to be able to consume, and of course, qualitative data is much more useful in terms of really getting, you know, answering questions that companies have in terms of like, what customers are really going through. So, I mean, that's what the platform is really designed to do, to get at that kind of data and to be able to do it quickly, efficiently, and be able to synthesize it really quickly and efficiently. So, you know, and we're one of many platforms. I mean, lots and lots of things are undergoing changes within, I guess, the broader research landscape. I mean, there are a ton of AI-related things. So there's definitely going to be a huge shift in data collection generally and understanding customers, you know, well beyond our platform. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be a lot of changes that are happening just in terms of the volume of data you can collect, the speed of analyzing that data, the speed of reacting to it, but also finding out sort of hidden nuggets of data. I mean, I'm sure you've heard in like biotechnology of, you know, sifting through tons of drug candidates and the AI being able to find that one that, you know, no person would be able to find because it's just too much data. I mean, the same thing applies of just kind of finding hidden linkages and things like that through massive amounts of data. So in terms of immediate changes I see in terms of, you know, my area, which is much more sort of human-centered design research type area. You know, a lot of the work has traditionally been qualitative research because it's a lot of sort of understanding process. I mean, if you're going to do like a service design blueprint, things like that, you know, that's a very qualitative process and understanding all the steps that are going into that. But a lot of companies, you know, there was like the early 2010s when a lot of companies were doing a lot of in-depth qual, but I feel like a lot of that has shifted over the years to much more pressure to do quantitative research for various reasons. I think some might shift back because of AI in just that it enables the sort of speed and cost effectiveness of quant, but being able to still collect the qual data. So I think that's one area where we might see a shift. For sure.
And wanted to like sort of drill down a bit on the different use cases for Research Goat. So like things like voter sentiment, employee experience, reducing the discovery process from weeks to days. This is one that's really important for us as a marketing agency. You know, we'll spend, you know, weeks, you know, onboarding a new client, trying to really understand their audience or their ICPs, their ideal customer profile, to use marketing agency language, and also getting feedback on potential new product features. Just curious, like how you're thinking about those use cases and how you've seen them applied in the early days of Research Goat.
Yeah, I mean, AI is, you know, really only as good as like the context you give it and the prompting you tell it in terms of like the task and all of that. So, I mean, it's been a lot of work to hone in on the right context, the right instructions. But once we get to that, I mean, it's pretty easy to have the AI do the things we want it to do in the research process. Because, I mean, the conversations are dynamic, but the steps themselves and like the process, okay, now we're going to create a discussion guide, we're going to, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, it's a set, you know, a fairly set process with dynamic inputs from the participant. Yeah, once we have those things down, we haven't really seen a limit on the types of use cases. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the best use cases are like you mentioned, are cases where there's, you know, obvious need for going in-depth qual, like employee experience and really understanding employees or voter sentiment. But, you know, it's large scale. We're talking Fortune 500 company or, you know, the U.S. population with voter sentiment. So you want to do qualitative research, but to actually collect all that is like impossible in traditional ways. So yeah, I mean, it's a sort of a repeatable process. We build everything in terms of collecting that data and like how we want to analyze it. And then, yeah, I mean, it's able to do things that we've always wanted to do, but haven't been able to do just because of the scale and things like that.
Really interesting. Would love to hear a bit about, so part of what you do is you get experts, right? Like survey participants involved. And these are qualified folks who are subject matter experts in the areas that the folks who employ Research Goat are looking to beef up the information. Just curious to understand like your recruitment process for those folks. How do you ensure that they're qualified experts? How do you make sure that their understanding of things is relevant and trustworthy? Because I know that's like obviously a big issue these days with the spread of, you know, secondary, you know, AI content that's just kind of regurgitating things out there. The importance of subject matter experts and firsthand expertise, you know, is just growing. So curious to hear about your process there.
It's AI, but just like any research process, it would be garbage in, garbage out. So it does require good, high quality data, maybe even more so because there's less sort of finessing with the human, you know, it is much more like taking input A and creating output B. So, you know, you need the right inputs to do that. So yeah, I mean, ensuring high quality participants is definitely a huge part of it. So, you know, on our platform, you can either bring your own, and we definitely give briefings on how to find the right participants and, you know, who they should be and, you know, incentivizing them properly and all that. But yeah, we're also able to find participants. We don't maintain a panel ourselves. We have panel partners that we work with to be able to get participants. But honestly, it's the same sort of things that have applied in traditional research in finding the right participants. So, I mean, I've worked in research for a long time and very much sort of using the same strategies and sort of how to incentivize people. Yeah, I mean, it's like putting together a really high quality brief screener that our AI is able to do to really get at the right type of participants. And we set up our screener in such a way that, you know, setting up a good screener, it's like you don't want to ask things too directly where the participant can like just guess what you're looking for. So the AI is able to do that and sort of put together questions that aren't overly obvious on what we're looking for. So that's one thing. I mean, we also do things like, I mean, you're right, anything that's like AI or like an automated task, I mean, it's like ripe for fraud in research, where, you know, it's just people on Amazon Mechanical Turk and things like that. So, I mean, we also do things like actually record the interviews and, you know, collect all the data on like who the participant is and their email. And I mean, sometimes even like their LinkedIn profile. So, I mean, there's a lot of like tracing back on who the participant is, and you can, you know, you can see the participant and listen to the recording and everything. So, you know, it's not just like a black box of data. So there's a lot of ways to just go back and ensure. I mean, once people see they're on video too, I mean, it's like that in itself is a security feature.
Yeah, that was sort of my question. Was like, do you actually get to see the video recording or the audio recording of the interview? Which sounds like you do. So that's a nice validation point. Have you had any good good luck or even skill, I should say, in sourcing like hard to get participants, like folks who are extremely niche and maybe there's like very few of them in the world. Maybe they don't have a huge digital presence. Just curious about that.
I mean, honestly, no, not on our platform, because we usually tell people if it's like a super specific recruit to work with a specialized recruiter, you know, we need Fortune 500 CEOs, things like that. That's too difficult for us. I mean, we could probably do it, but like, that would just be like hiring us for another project, right? It was like, as opposed to anything automated. So no, I mean, as long as it's somewhat, you know, close to general population, and that's generally the types of people that people have been looking for. I mean, if it's also like, you know, you're looking for this super specialized, hey, Fortune 500 company, CEO, things like that, you know, probably going to do the interview themselves anyways, right? So like just the use case, I think, lends it more to like general population type of recruits.
Yeah, one thing that's good to mention is like, you know, getting good results from AI is all about learning the art of prompt engineering, right? Like, so asking the right questions and providing the right amount of context, giving, you know, maybe even examples. So super curious to understand how you trained ResearchGoat's AI model to you know, ask the right questions and just interface with the interviewees better than other tools out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I come from a research background and have done a ton of research myself. So, you know, moderating thousands, I assume, of interviews. So a lot of experience on, you know, what makes a good interview and what opens people up and how to structure it properly and those sorts of things. And so definitely tried to instill as much of that as possible into how the interviews take place and how the AI reacts and things like that. So yeah, I mean, we did a lot of like just training on, hey, this is a good follow-up question. This is not a good follow-up question. You know, it tries to get at, you know, if somebody says, I like this, I don't like this, and then ask like a why question or ask for examples, you know, those sorts of things. But also do things like challenge the participants occasionally. You know, they mention something and you know, the AI goes back to previous and part of the conversation and asking about that and like how it connects to those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, it's all about having the right data set on like what is a good example of, you know, an interview or analysis, having the right context of what the conversation is about and like who the participant is, and then yeah, I mean, the AI is then pretty good at carrying out the conversation.
There's been a lot of talk about obviously bias and misinformation and sort of hallucinations with AI, you know, generative AI models. So just curious how you've built guardrails to prevent against that in your specific model with ResearchGoat.
One thing is we don't have people like just asking questions. So it's all on somewhat of like rails, right? Like we have very specific inputs and outputs and, you know, checked and rechecked and things like that. So there's, even though it, like the data set itself, you know, in terms of the interviews is dynamic, like what we're doing with it and like it isn't that dynamic. It's pretty predictable. So it's been easier to put up like guardrails of like, okay, we, you know, and it's a, you know, it's a contained data set. They're not asking about facts about the War of 1812, things like that. They're just asking about, we're just prompting about the particular interviews that have just taken place, right? So it's limited data set, limited usage of the data set. So we haven't seen a big issue there. The only thing we had to do was a little bit of, you know, initially, like on the output, it would occasionally like make up a quote, but we put in things to prevent it from doing that. But that was it would never like completely sort of make up anything in terms of like the analysis, but because we ask for examples, and so it would,
yeah,
you know, and we're asking for like multiple examples. Oh, you know, the AI feeling, oh, I got to fill something in. Let me just come up with a quote. But yeah, we've got it to not do that anymore.
To be fair, and I find this hilarious about the conversations about AI, like we often accuse the AI of doing things that we do on a regular basis. Like how many times have you heard someone misattribute like a Mark Twain quote or something like that? And just like, so it's just kind of funny that we get to your point of garbage in, garbage out. Ironically, the AIs make the same mistakes that we humans make, but we're very hard on them, obviously, because it's a new thing. Any interesting sort of success stories or early wins? I know it's early, you know, in terms of research go, but some successes you want to shout about?
I mean, it's more just been, people getting through projects successfully, honestly, is like a win, and, you know, everything working and people being happy. We have people using the platform and trying other different projects. You know, it's very easy to just kind of sign up and try it. And yeah, them just inputting their questions and getting some participants and getting the data back and, hey, it worked. You know, that's definitely a cool and a success.
Yeah, just having the thing, I mean, after all the work you put into it, just having the thing function the way you imagine it to or want it to is often a win. Curious about like the market opportunity here, like and sort of what inspired you to kind of found or co-found ResearchGoat. Like what were you seeing in the market? Like, oh, these firms or these companies, they really just need to reduce the, you know, discovery time. Like what was the sort of specific need that you were seeing in the market that inspired ResearchGoat?
So, I mean, right before I was at Accenture, which is obviously gigantic consulting firm working with a lot of big clients. You know, in anything we're doing, we need data, you know, whether it's working in design or just like working on a launch plan or a strategy, you need something to go off of. And, you know, oftentimes that's collecting some sort of research. I mean, it should be ideally, but clients often would not want to collect data or only collect a minimal amount, even though they can recognize it would be good to do it. They just don't, for whatever reason, have the time, the budget. So the insight really was just, hey, you know, clients need this data. They ideally would want to collect it, but just don't have the time, budget. So can we do something that doesn't sacrifice quality too much, but is able to collect that data in a really easy, relevant way that then can be applied to whatever design, strategy, etc.
Would love to hear a bit more about your buyers. Like who are the individuals, who are the humans at XYZ companies that are likely most invested in a project like ResearchGoat? Obviously, I'm an agency founder. You know, agencies want to reduce their discovery time, but who else are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, agencies are certainly a big one, and agencies of all sorts. Just anybody who's dealing with data and clients who need data to do X. So that's definitely a big one. But yeah, I mean, we've also seen just like, you know, research groups within big companies as well, just looking for ways to streamline, automate, be able to grow the scale of a lot of their research, not necessarily a place, but just, yeah, being able to get to a bigger scale. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of been all over the place. You know, because there are lots of different ways to use it and a lot of different, yeah, just a ton of different use cases. So, I mean, it's been kind of all over the place in terms of who might be a potential user. Really just anybody using data and sort of needing scale in that data. And I mean, who doesn't want to collect data quicker, easier, cheaper? I guess potentially anybody, but yeah, definitely agencies have been a big buyer. I mean, thing with the corporations, like there's definitely interest, but it's a little slower going just because AI is so new and, you know, security concerns and things like that. It's not like a lack of interest in like the use case. It's just, it's other things that sort of make it a slower process to adopt.
And we'd love to hear a bit more about your personal journey. So, you know, you mentioned working for big names like Accenture. Would just be curious how your experiences at some of these major companies or, you know, working with them as clients, how did it influence your vision to develop an AI-powered qualitative research platform? What were the sort of milestones along the way that led you to ResearchGoat?
So, I mean, I originally came from academia, anthropologist, and then moved into design from there. So like at an industrial design firm. And I've basically been in, you know, some kind of design, innovation, strategy type of role ever since, whether on agency side or client side. And when I first got into it, it was a lot more, I mean, I just did a ton of like ethnography and, you know, really getting out into the field and being able to do a lot of in-depth research. Again, I think 2000s, early 2010s, there's a lot more appetite for that. I've seen some of that dry up, and you know, the biggest drying up was like COVID, where everything went Zoom, and a lot of things have remained Zoom in terms of research. And you know, that was a big thing, just seeing like the appetite for like how companies want to do research had kind of shifted. And then of course, you know, AI becoming like a big thing, and sort of like, you know, those two things combined, you could just see like there was definitely going to be a lot of shifts in how research was done going forward. And yeah, I just wanted to get out in front of it and try to do my own thing there, sort of going with where the trends were headed along both those lines. So yeah, just seeing what I could do and leveraging my expertise as much as possible to try and enable that.
And I'm glad you talked about kind of like where AI is heading. So we're just super curious, like having jumped in, you know, kind of feet first into developing an AI powered product, just curious kind of like what you envision in terms of the future, how taking on board these ethical considerations, the drive for innovation, the big push for kind of reducing, you know, research, that, you know, the scale and scope of research processes, focusing them more using AI. Just where do you see things headed? Like, what are your sort of broad predictions for the space specifically?
Just AI in general?
Even AI, I'd say specific to the research space, because I feel like that's where you're best powered to speak, like, you know, maybe other applications you see for AI in research and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can go many ways, but both, you know, very good to, you know, dystopian ways. It's pretty wide open right now. You know, I will say, like, you know, working with AI a lot, you see that, you know, at this point, it is still pretty dumb, like, overall. You know, we have it on, like, rails and very controlled, like, and it's able to do that sort of limited task well. But, like, truly, like, just being a smart, like, hey, just go do this for me. Like, no, like, AI can't do that. But the thing with AI is, you know, and people like, oh, well, AI can't ever do what I do, like, look, and they give examples from current state. I mean, that's true, but it won't stop getting better. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, it might not, you know, replace what you do now, but it's only going to get better. It's not going to get worse. It's only going to get better. And like your skill set, you're still going to be a person. It's not going to fundamentally change. Like, we're not going to evolve into something different. So just the speed tracks are completely different for the human versus the AI. And, you know, eventually that's going to come to a head in some form or fashion. My ideal state of research is, again, I think a lot of like quant work can move to qual, and sort of a good combination of sort of human machine of, you know, being able to collect a ton of data, sift through it, you know, in a really efficient way, and like have people following up on things, going more, you know, humanoid robots and things like that going out in the field probably isn't that soon. And probably even if it was, it would probably always be kind of creepy. So maybe humans always have that aspect. I don't know. I mean, people probably don't want to be interviewed, you know, in like a hospital setting by like a robot and things like that. I don't know. It's, yeah, it's probably always like a creep factor there.
You wonder though, like especially something like vote, you know, we talked about voting and like polling and stuff like that. You wonder if people's responses would change if it's like a humanoid robot versus like another, like a person. Like, I know there's been some research about persuasion and having like different types of people, different reactions from the pollster and things like that, that can kind of shape the responses. Just curious if there, it would almost be like a flattening maybe, who knows, but just, just a curious one.
No idea. I mean, like I said, I think things can go a lot of different ways. So yeah, I mean, there could be this human machine melding, and I think that's, and could end up with like even more like qual design research because of that. Hey, we can scale things up really easily, and, but also leverage what makes people unique and really get an awesome blend.
You mentioned like quant moving to qual, like, so quantitative research moving to qualitative research. We'd love to just hear about that a bit more. Like, what do you see happening there and why?
Well, I mean, it's total speculation, but I think a lot of work. So like, you know, quant is great for like scale type of questions. How many people do X, or, you know, when anything statistics is involved, correlation and things like that. Qual, you know, ideally should be for like the more, you know, why type of questions. You know, why do people do certain things, or process type of things? You know, people go, understanding people's day and how the different elements connect. And so a lot of that, those like why type of questions, you know, I think are just sort of defaulted to quant, even though they shouldn't be, for things we've talked about in terms of budget and timelines. You know, obviously it's much quicker to do a quant survey, but ideally it would be done in a qual way. So I think some of that work could start moving back over. And that would be the ideal state where a lot more work comes into qual design research and just sort of balances out qual quant and sort of the right method is being used for what the question really is. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of the ideal state.
Got it. Yeah, I think also I'd be curious to hear your opinion too about the regulatory space. So obviously there's been a huge amount of talk about recent legislation passed in the EU and, you know, just what's going to happen with, you know, the regulatory space when it comes to artificial intelligence. So curious if you've seen any promising things, any worrying things in the regulatory space when it comes to AI, anything you and your firm are worried about when it comes to regulation that might affect your product. Curious your thoughts there.
Honestly, I haven't paid too much attention to it. You know, we're certainly clients ask a lot on like data protection and privacy and things like that, and GDPR and the California laws and things like that. But no, I mean, there's nothing like fundamentally worrying me I think like anything, there's a lot of talk, but like it's very difficult, like once things are moving on like technologies like this to actually, well, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of political will to like change much, honestly. So I don't know that any sort of regulations and things will ultimately go very far.
Yeah, political will nor like regulatory sort of, how do we say, like heft. The idea that like a regulator is going to come knocking on your door or any other, you know, AI company's door, like short of like OpenAI maybe or something like that is pretty questionable and very unlikely, which, you know, you could look at that many different ways, but it's interesting just to say that like people are just moving ahead, you know, moving the tech forward, as you said, and without really looking over their shoulder, which probably in some senses is a good thing, but also I know there like folks have concerns out there about what that could mean. So something to look out for in the future. Where can folks find out more about your work, about Research Goat, and anything you want to shout out about Research Goat in terms of, you know, where you all are headed and how folks can get involved? We'd be curious to hear more about that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's researchgoat.com. Very easy to find us. Free to sign up, free to try it out. By all means, sign up, try it out. But, you know, you can also set up a conversation with me to go more in depth right on the website to take you through everything. And connect with me on LinkedIn. We'd love to chat with anybody on AI or research or design, whatever it might be.
That's great. And we wouldn't be a marketing agency if we didn't ask about your name. How did you land on Research Goat itself? Like how'd you get that?
Well, within like the research space, there's a lot of animal type of things like SurveyMonkey, right? Being the main one. So there's that. And then, I mean, the research part is pretty obvious, you know, just telling, okay, they're a research related company, but the goat, you know, sticking with the animal thing, but also the sports related, you know, greatest of all time, just trying to play up like, oh, it's able to do really good research. So goat logo, but also, yeah, connected with the sports thing of greatest of all time.
Nice one. Yeah, we love the animal. I mean, obviously our name's Literal Humans, but we love the anthropomorphic animals, like animals doing human things and stuff like that. It plays well with audiences. So love the fact you've gone with a goat and the goat, you know, obviously the sports references and stuff like that. So that's really cool. Well, thank you so much, Ross, for your time. Really appreciate, again, you jumping on early Pacific time. This has been another episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. Our guest today was Ross Mitchell, the co-founder of Research Goat. That's researchgoat.com. They do generative AI for in-depth qualitative research, and they're doing really good work. So definitely be sure to check them out. Thanks for your time today, Ross.
Thank you.
And for everyone out there, please don't forget to give us, well, first of all, listen, download, give us a 5-star rating so we can keep bringing on wonderful guests like Ross to talk about cool stuff like generative AI for qualitative research. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.